A little contradiction to resolve today. For just the few of us who are here who might be interested. In his letter to the Philippians, start there. Stay in Philippians and Colossians. His letter to the Philippians, chapter 3, verse 2, he says kind of a shocking thing when Paul begins verse 2 by saying, "Beware of dogs, beware of evil workers, beware of the concision." And then this section goes on through the end of the chapter, and particularly in verse 19, he says, "Whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things." That's about as bad a thing as Paul could say about anybody, especially anybody who claimed to be a Christian. His reference to concision here in this section also, and it's in the context of this whole section, it's obvious that the enemies that he's warning about are Jewish. But their behavior is certainly very un-Jewish. Their God is their belly, and their lustful appetites. Now, it's not just talking about food. Belly is the lustful appetites of all kinds. And they glory in shameful things. Surely the people that he's warning the Philippians about here practice some kind of moral license. You know, even hedonism, perhaps. And yet, and the little contradiction I come across personally is, at the very same time, almost simultaneously, he writes a letter to the Colossians. And in Colossians chapter 2, he says this about his opponents. 2:18. "Let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility and worshiping of angels." And in dropping to verse 23 in that section, "Which things have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship and humility and neglecting of the body." Humility and neglecting of the body don't sound at all like the same people that he's warning against to the Philippians. Now, I have in recent past, half of the past year been on this theme, but in the recent past, I expressed my belief that there's only one opponent, one opposing gospel, one heresy that is being fought in the New Testament. But if that's true, then how could this be? How can Paul be at the same time warning the Philippians against men who glory in their shame and warn the Colossians at the same time against being beguiled by false humility and neglecting of the body? Surely the threats to the church in Philippi that he's warning about are Epicureans or hedonists or libertines. But the opponents in Colossae practice self-denial as if they were ascetics. And so how could they possibly be the same opponents? How could they be teaching the same heresy? And that's my question today. I don't know if it ever occurred to you, but it seems like a contradiction to me. How do you answer that? I've been scanning the New Testament chronologically in a series of messages, and I'm up to the period of Paul's imprisonment in Rome. So I want to take this few minutes this afternoon to answer this seeming contrast or contradiction between Philippians and Colossians. How can the libertines that he warns of to the Philippians be the same as the heretics who are seemingly ascetics in Colossae? I proposed in September that the letters, that these two letters, Philippians and Colossians, were written in the period of Paul's first imprisonment in Rome, about 61 through 63. He's being held a prisoner there, probably chained to a praetorian guard. And then the church at Philippi during this time, that's up in Macedonia, knows of Paul's needs. He's having to rent this house, even though he's a prisoner in the house. They know of his need for money, for food and housing. And that congregation in Philippi was very diligent, apparently above all other congregations of his, in providing him money. So they sent him money by means of one of their elders. And that you can see that in Philippians 2:25, where he refers to Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor, and fellow soldier, he's an elder from Philippi. But your messenger and he that ministered to my wants. And so if Epaphroditus is the man who has brought him the money. And he writes this letter of Philippians as a thanks to the congregation at Philippi, thanking them for their support. That's the primary reason for the letter. And then, near this very same time, another elder shows up from Colossae. Colossae is down in Asia Minor, just inland from Ephesus. And he is requesting Paul's help against a heresy that's troubling the Colossian church. If you look in Colossians 1, verse 7, he's named there, as you also learned of Epaphras, our dear fellow servant, who is for you a faithful minister of Christ. He's an elder from Colossae. And the fight against the heresy is the reason for writing this letter of Colossians. In 2 verse 4, it's obvious that there is a threat there. 2 verse 4, and this I say, lest any man should beguile you with enticing words. Verse 8, beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. The heresy, it seems, is making serious inroads in Colossae. By the way, that heresy is well recognized in most every commentated modern commentary as Gnostics. But Epaphras has come to Rome to seek Paul's help. You know, his advice may be at least maybe this very what he's seeking is this letter and Paul's credibility in putting out this heresy in the church in Colossae. And my guess is then that these two letters are related. Just a guess, his time order, that he's still writing his letter of thanks to the Philippian church when Epaphras arrives from Colossae bringing the news of the heresy down there. And so I think then Paul interjects the bulk of chapter 3 in Philippians to warn them of this heresy, this urgent warning. It just comes out of the blue in an otherwise very encouraging, positive letter. Watch out for dogs. Evil workers. The situation, however, is quite different down in Colossae. You know, the heresy has not arrived in Philippi yet, but it's rampant in Colossae. So Paul does not argue to the Philippians about their religious practices. He's not talking about their religious practices because they haven't seen them yet. The heretics haven't arrived in Philippi. But his warning to Philippi is about the ultimate fruits of what this heresy is going to bring. The heresy leads to a conviction that one is liberated. Hence my title, Libertines and Ascetics. Are they libertines or are they ascetics? The warning to Philippi is against libertines, those who think they are going to be liberated from the constraints of the flesh. And therefore, ultimately, they will glory in their shameful liberty. And their behavior is very bad. When they will come, he is saying, they will teach circumcision. But he does not honor the word, their practice, by calling it circumcision. He refers to it as concision. Just as in Galatia, the heretics teach circumcision but have no intention of keeping the law. So he calls it concision, meaning cutting or mutilation. That's all it is they're teaching cutting and mutilation, but for no good end, because their end, in the end, they are dogs, he says, and evil workers. But in contrast, the nature of the heresy in Colossae, as we just saw, seems to be ascetic. Verse 18, let no man beguile you of your reward in a voluntary humility. Humility is a good thing, of course, but Paul here is calling their humility false humility. It's in the old King James, it's called voluntary humility, but in the NIV and the Berean translations, it's translated false humility. And it's even clearer, I think, in a translation called the Jubilee 2000 translation, where it's called pretext of humility. Let no man beguile you with the pretext of humility. Verse 20 of chapter 2 says, wherefore, if you be dead with Christ from the rudiments of the world, why, as though living in the world, are you subject to ordinances? Touch not, taste not, handle not. What kind of ordinances would those be? I think the ordinance he has in mind here of a priestly nature, priestly ordinances. And I would use as an example, a contemporary example of those ordinances, the Essenes of Judea. They were contemporaries in time. They had strict rules, according to Josephus, of holy purity. The heretics in Colossae are also Jewish. But Josephus demonstrates that the Essenes' ideas about holy purity are contemporary, which he says in verse 22, are to perish with the using after the commandments and doctrines of men, which things have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship and humility and neglecting of the body. But these are not at all Greek pagan ascetics. These are Jewish mystics governed by rules of purity such as observed by the priests. The Essenes down in Judea practiced Levitical rituals. Although they were separated from the temple in Jerusalem, they could not participate in the temple in Jerusalem. They did practice those rituals. And I'm not saying that the heretics over in Colossae are Essenes, not at all. I'm just saying that such ritual practices were well known among mystical Jewish sects of the time. In verse 18, he warns them against being beguiled into the worship of angels, which is an interesting phrase. Worshipping of angels, actually in the Greek it's just two words, angel worship. It could mean worshipping angels as intermediaries, but it can also mean the religion of the angels, worship as the angels worship. Angel worship doesn't mean necessarily worshipping the angels, it can mean worshipping like the angels, angel worship. Like Lutheran worship or Catholic worship, angel worship. Which is also illustrated at this time in history by the Essenes down in Judea. They had no access to the temple in Jerusalem, as I said, but they believed that there was a higher spiritual tabernacle in the heaven in which the angels worshiped. And they could join in with the angels in worshiping in that heavenly tabernacle. And the heretics in Colossae may similarly be then worshiping with the angels in perhaps the tongues of angels. Paul may be borrowing that term back in 1 Corinthians 13 when he says speaking with the tongues of angels. He may be borrowing their term. It's just like the heresy, but just like the heresy caused in Corinth when that was advocated, it is causing division. It causes pride, it causes jealousy over the ability to speak in the tongues of angels and to worship in the heavenly tabernacle. But Paul finishes the thought in verse 18 by saying, they are intruding into those things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up in his fleshly mind. He thinks he's spiritual, worshiping with the angels, but it's actually a spiritual vanity. Their rituals and their rules of purity, priestly purity, therefore, are in effect an initiation into their religion. They're physical things, but they're said to be necessary to initiate you into the spiritual state. But once you reach the spiritual state, the constraint of the flesh no longer applies. Paul adds a telling statement at the end of verse 23 when he talks about will worship and humility and neglecting the body, but then he ends by saying, not in any honor to the satisfying of the flesh. Rather obscure wording in the old King James, but in your new King James it says no value against the indulgence of the flesh, doesn't it? And I think it's even clearer in the NET Bible where it says, a wisdom with no true value, they in reality result in fleshly indulgence. So I think the sense of that phrase is that the will worship and the neglecting the body are just means to an end. They are initiation rites. They are attempts to become spiritual, which is what the heretics are promising. But Paul is saying that those things do not overcome the indulgence of the flesh. It is the indulgence of the flesh that the heretics' doctrines are in fact leading to. Libertine. They are not ascetics. Asceticism is phase one. Phase two is liberty. free to practice a free and immoral lifestyle, probably freedom to participate, if they want to, in pagan religions, such as eating flesh sacrificed to idols. And I will only speculate, even participating in pagan temples, temple prostitutes, wouldn't put it past this heresy. Well, that's just speculation. But they would claim that all this is supposedly no harm, does no harm to a truly liberated Christian. His soul is free. Having discovered his inner divinity, he is no longer subject to the constraints of the flesh, nor is he subject to the laws of the creator of this flesh. He's come to know a higher God. This is the heresy. That was the ultimate state of the practitioner of this heresy. So the church at Philippi, summary then, that to contrast these two things, to the church at Philippi, Paul writes to watch out for these heretics who have not come there yet. He's warning against the ultimate fruit of their doctrine when he says they are dogs and evil workers and who glory in their shameful liberty. But to the church at Colossae, he's writing against the practices that are already being urged there in Colossae. Things that are of no value, he says, in overcoming the sinful pulls of the flesh. So it is a religion of ritual and initiation that leads you into a life of moral license. It's just the kind of religion that can appear both ascetic and libertine at the same time, as it does here. Paul has a lot more to say about that heresy in Colossians. I won't get into it today, obviously. But they are important things, I think, to explain his arguments and some of the strange things he says in the letter. And I'll get back to the letter of Colossians at a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Wickman.